Session number 12243, Captain De Courcy Island, Reel 7.
Island, Reel 7. In the middle of 1917, you moved to the Relentless for destroyer experience. Could you explain what exactly that was all about and the move came about?
We were supposed to do a fortnight's training in a destroyer. And I was appointed to the Relentless, which was an R-class destroyer built in Yarrow, and I think I'm right in saying that it was one of the fastest ships that had been built in the Navy. She did over 40 knots in our trials. Ship's company of about 80, I suppose, odd. The captain was a Commander Colville. And of course she would have carried a first lieutenant and a sub-lieutenant and a warrant officer and the captain as well, of course. I was supposed to do a fortnight in her, which was rather stupid in a way, because of course we went straight off on convoy escort work, and in point of fact my face, I suppose, fitted. I spent nearly 3 months in her.
What was it like aboard? How did the routine differ aboard a destroyer like the Relentless from on a big ship, obviously?
Oh, completely and utterly different. I started keeping watch as a midshipman. First of all, daylight, daytime. When I'd got the hang of things, then I sort of took on as an officer watch quite illegally. My captain was an old-fashioned type, married with 5 children. He was a wonderful ship handler, marvellous ship handler. He didn't believe a great deal in what you might call modern education, in the sense that his chart work, he never used a ruler or anything like that. He always did it with his thumb. He got his course with his thumbnail like that. He had a great sense of the sea and that sort of thing. I used to take occasional sights to fix our position. He didn't believe in that sort of thing. But I can remember him once when we were in a fog. We'd been on an Atlantic expedition, convoy escort, and we were trying to make a landfall near Londonderry. And he came on deck, I remember, I was on watch, and said, "I can smell peat." And I said, "Oh, yes." And he said, "Yes, give me the chart." And he looked at the chart a bit and he said, "That's where we are, roughly." All the course turned about, I didn't want to get any closer to land, and he was within half a mile when the fog lifted. He was that sort of chap.
How old was he?
He would have been, I suppose, about 35, that sort of between 35 and 40, I suppose, that sort of age. Not much more. I think just over 35.
How did he treat you? I mean, was it very different from the experiences you'd had on the bigger ship, the way you
put Well, he was a ginger-headed chap with all the goes of that. But I don't know, I got on with him all right. And he didn't want to get rid of me, you see. until I mean, of course, one well, you went go off on these jobs in destroyers. I mean, you don't go much near port. You do an awful lot of time at sea, and eventually, my captain wanted to get me back.
Okay. So, when you were on watch duty, what, I mean, on the battleship, you'd just been at the back of the thing.
Oh yes, you were just a messenger.
What was your job on the destroyer?
Well, you were in charge of the bridge and the ship and all that sort of thing. Ops the watch, you see, gives all the orders, course, speed, everything, what you're doing. Report anything that the captain that he think he ought to know.
Would he ever see cabin again?
Yes, oh yes, they all lived in destroyers in those days. They lived at sea in a little cubby hole at the back of the bridge the whole time.
So they wouldn't go down to their quarters?
They wouldn't go down to their quarters, except they might go down to for nature, and sometimes they go down for food, not always.
So, and what sort of circumstance would you call the captain if anything untoward happened?
Oh yes, you say yes. I mean, if you saw sighted a ship or a light at night or whatever it was, anything like that.
What about if the weather got a bit worse?
Oh yes, you. If he hadn't realised that, you told him anything that happened, you told him.
Did you like the responsibility of that? You were still very young.
Well, it was very frightening at first. But you get used to it.
Do you think the responsibility was good for you?
Oh, of course, yes. I mean, I think I can say that why I liked it was the responsibility was frightening. But you were treated as a man in that way, which was very different from being a junior midshipman in a battleship.
Now, I noticed they all called you boy from the conversations you had on
yeah.
the battleship.
Yeah.
Did they still call you... They didn't call you boy then on the...
No. No. Stoddy. Well, I remained in her for, I think it was...
The other aspects of routine, what were your other jobs aboard her?
Oh, with the sailors, part of ship, cleaning ship, all that sort of thing.
And what about your action station? What would that be?
I think on the bridge.
So not at a gun or anything?
No, I don't think, not in the Relentless.
So what about, I know you were on convoy escort work.
Yes.
From Shetlands to Norway.
Yes, that's it.
What was the setup with that? How would it work?
We were based on Lerwick in the Shetlands, and we ran the convoys to Norway and back. We went from Lerwick to a place called Utva, which was rather in the north, halfway up Norway. And we had these convoys to take over, usually about half a dozen ships, that sort of thing.
How many destroyers would there be?
Two of us. Anything numbers up to a dozen in the convoy, and we took them over. They were awful old crocs. Every now and then, I think about once a month, we got what they call a slow convoy. Well, that was 4 knots in fine weather.
Wasn't that a bit of a waste of a ship like the Relentless that could do 40?
That was just it.
And what formation would they, if they were, say, about 6 to 8 of them, what formation would they sail in?
Oh, they'd be the group together. And then the destroyers, you'd probably have one ahead or going from one bow to another and that sort of thing. And then one tailing them behind, encouraging them to do a bit more speed. We used to find that if you really wanted to get a bit of a move on, we used to drop a depth charge, which they thought was a submarine in the vicinity, you see, and up would go the smoke from their funnels, and they'd belt on for a bit. Then we took them into the fjord in Norway, where we were met by a Norwegian little torpedo boat, tiny little thing. And they took over, once they were in the fjord, they'd take them over. and then turn over the next convoy to us to bring back.
What was convoy discipline like amongst the merchant seamen?
Varied, very varied. Very varied. On the whole, they realised that, that it was a ship's life and that sort of thing. They'd got to do what they were told. Because we did have attacks, you see, we used to lose the odd ship. We had a couple of trawlers or drifters to pick up any ship was torpedoed. They picked up the survivors.
The U-boats, right? What was the state of the art in defending against U-boats at the time?
All depth charge attacks, you see. If a U-boat attacked, they did periscope depth, of course, that sort of thing. And if we ever sighted a periscope or a ship was a torpedo or anything like that, you went into attack and you had to judge whether they crashed dive, you see. And you carried out a regular pattern of depth charge attacks.
What sort of a pattern would you...
Well, you might drop anything up to, say, half a dozen depth charges in a pattern round where you thought she might be.
And what was the means of detecting U-boats other than the periscope? I'm not quite sure whether any of the more...
Well, now, in those days, it was just sighting.
None of the more,
nothing like that.
What about hydrophones?
No, I don't think we had those. No.
So you were pretty limited?
We were limited, yeah. And of course, to some extent, they were rather cruder, as you might say, than the modern submarine.
Did you have any success against them?
Not that we knew of. Not that we could prove. When you dropped a depth charge pattern, usually what happened if a U-boat attacked, the nearest one would counterattack while the other shepherded the convoy away, you see. Unless there was definite debris or bodies, you couldn't claim.
So, and that never happened?
No, not in the Relentless, no.
What about the trawlers were there to pick up the survivors?
That's it.
Would most of the people survive under those arrangements?
Varied tremendously. Whether, how soon the ship sank.
What were they carrying the ships off the class?
What were they carrying?
To Norway and back.
Anything. I don't know. I don't know what their cargoes were. We never got touched then. We didn't worry about that.
Now, what were conditions at sea like? I mean, the destroyer's not a big ship, is it?
The weather was pretty awful at times. It amuses me these days when they talk about the danger of these oil rigs and that sort of thing. There was absolutely nothing. We had an unwritten law that you never turned back or you never gave up unless you either lost your bridge or a funnel. If you lost your bridge or part of it or rolled a funnel out, stays and break around, that sort of thing, you already got smashed up.
So that sounds if waves were actually breaking on the destroyer.
Oh yes, they'd break right across. Your bows would go right in.
Did you ever lose on the Relentless the funnel or the bridge?
No, we had a bridge damage.
Were you on the bridge at the time?
No, fortunately not.
Did you have to lash yourself on?
Yes, I had. I remember Leslie Baker. He was in. He did his time in the stars, and he had it. His bridge was completely washed away, except for the binnacle. The helmsman managed to lash himself to the wheel, and Leslie Baker lashed himself to the binnacle, and they got away with it.
Was it an impressive, I mean, when the sea was that high, about how high was the swell? I mean, what sort of waves are you talking about?
Oh, they're shorter. In the North Sea, they'd be fairly short, not like the Atlantic. Because they're short but very steep. It's hard to say how they are. I remember one time, I can't remember whether it was the Relentless or the Paloo, but our chief engineer came up out of the engine room, little round hatch like that, and was washed overboard. And the ship was rolling, frankly, like that, and he was washed back by the next one, which was unfortunate for him.
With this rough weather and you being used to a bigger ship, did you suffer from seasickness at all?
Yes, definitely. And whenever I went on watch, the captain said I was to bring a bucket and a scrubber. And if I was sick, then I scrubbed it up. That cured me.
So you did get better?
Oh, yes. I soon got over seasickness. I could take anything, really.
And,
fortunate.
What rations did you get while you were...
Very, well, just rations. I mean, at sea, in any bad weather, we live, as I said, on ship's cocoa, which is a block of sort of chocolate stuff that you melt. And then we used to drink that out of a sort of bottle thing. You had to stand up for everything, hold on with one hand and eat with the other. And ship's biscuits and cheese.
Right.
We spent, when we were on the Atfa convoy, it was 6.5 days at sea, to and fro. 18 hours in Lerwick, oiling, water, food, conference on the next convoy, what it consisted of, and so on, speed, so forth, and then away again.
So you didn't have much chance for recreation or rest?
No,
actually.
No.
What was the oiling procedure? I mean, that must have been a bit of a relief after coaling.
Oh, just you went alongside an oiler and just buttoned up and filled up.
Were you pleased to be on oil?
Well, it's definitely better than coal.
Now, once, I believe, you rescued a troop ship while you were...
Yes.
Could you tell me that story? What happened there?
We intercepted a signal that a troop ship from Russia was being attacked by a submarine, by a U-boat, in a certain position. We reckoned we were nearest. It was a very good day, flat calm happened to be. But as we were on convoy escort, we were a very fast ship, as I said, but we only used two boilers. We could do 33 knots on two boilers and 40 knots on when you connected up the third one. So we belted off at 33 knots, and when we got to the scene, the U-boat was on the surface firing at the ship, and the ship had an antiquated gun and the stern was firing back. Neither hit the other. We came up pretty quickly and the U-boat did a crash dive, and we dropped a pattern of depth charges to keep her down and then escorted the liner away very closely. She had some very pretty nurses on board. I remember the captain saying he wanted to have a look at them.
And the other thing, that you were on an Atlantic convoy, I think you mentioned at the Atlantic.
Oh yes, we varied. We did about 6 weeks running on the Norwegian convoy, and then you might get a job anywhere, really.
What difference were the, what was the difference to the Atlantic?
Well, the Atlantic, of course, seas are different in the sense that you get much longer swells, which makes a difference, you see, for the movement of the ship and what speed you go and all that sort of thing.
Was it worse, or, I mean, was an Atlantic swell worse than... You said that the North Sea was steeper, but
yes.
Not as deep.
Yes, I think that probably the Atlantic swells were more comfortable, in a sense, with the movement of the ship. And not quite so, not usually quite so wet.
Would you be in a bigger convoy in the Atlantic?
No, I don't think we were, as a rule.
So it's still 6 to 12 ships?
Yes, yes.
And where would you be escorting them to?
We only took them out so far. Because in those days, the U-boats wouldn't go further than that, you see.
About how far?
Well, a figure of 17 west is in my mind, but I wouldn't be quite certain whether that is so.
Now, you were with the Relentless for 3 months?
Just under 3 months, I think, as far as I... My memory's a little vague on at this time.
And then you were transferred to the Offer to go back to the...
I was transferred, why or where or how, I don't remember. The only thing I remember about the Offer was that the captain was also an old type. He always wore a monocle. He always insisted that his officers wore a collar day and night. Didn't matter how dirty it was, because we couldn't exactly wash them. But eccentric.
And were you pleased to get back to the Bellerophon, or how did you feel?
I don't really remember, I suppose. I thought it was just it was automatic. I had to go back, and that was that.
Did you have a preference by then for the battles?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, yes.
Which did you prefer?
Destroyers. Every time.
Why was that?
Because you were treated as a man, and you had responsibility. You weren't what I call just a wart.
Now, when you were back, I see from your book that it's a little confused about when exactly you took the seamanship examination, but let's just take it as if it was then anyway. What exactly, this is where you did take your examinations to pass out as a sub-lieutenant.
Yes.
What did that consist of?
Seamanship examination only.
And what was that?
Practical. Knots and splices.
What was the practical part?
Well, examination by an admiral on green, red, perfect safety, go ahead. That's all the rules of lights at sea. That type of thing. You were examined. We were examined by a small board, captains, an admiral, and I've told you there were four of us, Anthony Mones, Leslie Baker, and Robinson. Robinson was brilliantly clever. When we did our later courses, he always got a first at everything. But he failed his seamanship exam, curiously enough. The rest was passed. Well, as soon as I had been in the Paloo, I can't remember for how long or why I got into the Paloo again, but I did after I got back to the been working up for my exam or something. I got back for a short time into the Sawyers. I had to go back to take my exam, and thereby I missed her being beaten up in an action with the German force. But she was repaired. Her sister ship, the Partridge, was sunk. And I did my exam and passed. And then the captain of the Paloo asked me back again. And I was appointed.
So the first time you'd gone to the Paloo was you came back from the Offer.
I came back from the Offer, but I don't remember how long I was on board or. My memory is gone.
So the sort of sequence was Offer, the battleship,
Kalu,
and then back to the battleship,
and then back to that's it.
Well, looking, so not you, it sounds if you weren't on the ship, the big ship, long.
I wasn't.
So,
no.
Looking at the Kalu, this was probably to gain more experience again, was it?
I suppose so. Yes.
And what was the, how did the Kalu compare with the Relentless?
The Kalu was the same sort of time. I don't know. I think she was probably slightly older than the Relentless. The captain there was also a commander. He'd been promoted for this action they'd been in.
Would that be Cavendish?
Cavendish, yes.
What was he like?
A very quiet man. A different type. Never showed emotion. If anything went wrong, he had a curious habit of taking his uniform cap off and stamping on it. I don't know why. Whereas, and his messenger, his coxswain, would then brush it off and hand it back to him. I can't. That's what he did anyway.
Now, when you went there, you'd be in the same role as you had been on the Relentless,
Yes, I rather more advanced because he got me back. He got rid of his first lieutenant, and a sub-lieutenant had just been promoted to lieutenant, so he took over first lieutenant, and I took the sub's place, really.
This is after... this action at the Kalu was in, which... you missed that.
I missed that, right. Yeah.
So you were acting sub-lieutenant then?
Yes, I think so. I think I'd just been... I should, on paper, I think I had just got my... I just shipped my stripe, as they called it.
So one way or another, you were sub-lieutenant for the, you know...
Yes, yeah.
And I note in your book you said that life was more varied then. Why was that?
Oh, very much more varied, I think. I don't know why. We had a different sort of work. Different sort of jobs. One of the things I should say at this time is that nominally in a destroyer you belong to a flotilla, but in the First War particularly, or in that period of the war, you hardly ever saw any of the other, except probably two of you would work together. But I don't think we ever saw our Captain D, who was the head of the flotilla.
Which flotilla were you meant to be in, do you remember?
No, I can't remember the numbers.
It just wasn't important.
It wasn't all that important at that time, no. No, it didn't, because you'd never worked with them.
So how did that make life more varied? Did you see what
I mean? Well, we liked being on our own. Out of sight, out of mind. You know, we liked doing... it was convoy work in the Kalu to a certain extent. And the Hun got us in the end. We were escorting a mine laying squadron.
You're doing convoy work. That
convoy
was the
work.
Same
old thing.
Was it the Norway one?
No.
Which convoy were you on?
Oh, any one that.
So it could be anywhere.
Could be anywhere.
And were there any other jobs you were doing? Were you ever a fleet escort or anything?
Not that I remember, no.
Any other destroyer duties? You know, other jobs up there?
Yes, we worked, we had what you might call a consort, but I can't remember her name.
I know you were on watch and watch.
Yeah.
What did that mean?
4 hours on, 4 hours off, day and night.
Right through?
Right through.
Did you find that tiring?
Very. You see, you never got more than 3.5 hours sleep at a time, because you've got the watches 24 hours, you see. If you had one night, you would have the first, that was from 8 p.m. to midnight. Then, you see, you had turn over your watch and all that sort of thing before you got down to your cabin. And then you had the morning, which was from 4 till 7:30. The captain always used to take what we called the relieved decks, that was from 7:30 to 8:30 in the morning. so that we never we could vary our watches each day, you see, like that. So that you have, say, the forenoon, you have the first the morning, then you had your breakfast, then you cleaned ship if you could during the forenoon. That used to last till about almost 10, 11 o'clock. Then you probably tried to get some sleep. You had your midday meal, and then you had the afternoon watch, which was from 12:30 till 4, and so it went on like that. So that was that. That was life.
And the food arrangements, again, you'd just eat at your eat. You still wouldn't get below.
You sometimes, depending on the weather.
Did you have a cabin on the
pavilion? Yes, I did. Yeah. Yeah.
Where was that?
It was a small cabin flat aft, where the myself, the first lieutenant, and we had a warrant officer, and then there was what we called the chief, who was the engineer lieutenant commander, and we had this.